Welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning and glad to be back with you in the new year. Coming up on today's program, two features from our Dayton Youth Radio series. And later in the program, Culture Couch with Community Voices producer George Drake Jr. Up first, Dayton community members are rallying to support Oregon District businesses after a fire New Year's weekend. The fire broke out in the kitchen of Salar Restaurant and Lounge, which was heavily damaged. Smoke also affected other nearby shops. I talked to one proprietor about his experience that weekend.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you? The smell of smoke was still present when I entered Hicks Barbershop in the Oregon District. The barbershop is one of a half dozen other businesses that were forced to close. Owner James Hicks opened the shop about 4 years ago through the city's pop-up shop program.
I was coming in Friday morning, and unbeknownst to myself, I saw a lot of fire trucks up on Fifth Street. So I came in, cut back through the back way, through the Tynine parking lot, came up to find the building on fire and my door busted down.
In the 4 years here, can you give your take on kind of the camaraderie between businesses that operate here in this building and really the district?
In this building, I came through the pop-up shop program with Spice Paradise. Ulrika Massey is the owner operator of that. So we came in this together, opened up at the same time, you know, and watched both of our businesses grow during that. And then being down in the district, you know, it's a very tight-knit community. A lot of people know when new businesses come in, they reach out, they offer a welcome and any type of help. You know, everyone likes to patronize everyone else down here. So, you know, there's a lot of cross-purchasing amongst the businesses, and it's a nice, you know, tight-knit community down here.
Just to jump back to the renovations that you had done previously, was that just to add another station?
I was actually on the tail end of my renovation inside the shop that I was going to add a second chair. Business was dictating that I do that just so I could watch it grow, and I could not take in walk-ins and usually same-day appointments. Adding another barber would have offered, you know, more services for the community and to get more people to come in to be able just to walk in and to get a haircut at the time they wanted.
I understand a number of the half dozen or so businesses affected by this fire have managed to find temporary locations. What's your experience there?
Fortunately for myself, I have a very good friend, Tim Minton, at Centerville Barbers in Centerville that has offered a spot for myself that I can start cutting out of come next Tuesday. The thing is, like for myself in Ulrika, I have to have a licensed business. There are many different types of sanitary things that I have to do in order to cut hair. It's not like I can plop down in any space and start cutting. Same thing, you know, she has health guidelines herself. She can't do her food straight out of the kitchen. So for us, it's kind of been very impactful because our businesses are closed and closed down. You know, we can't do anything remotely with our businesses. So it's been kind of tough reaching out, getting to my customers, letting them know what's going on, because I still have customers calling that have no idea that this has happened. But, you know, with the space offered by Tim, it's helping me out tremendously.
Okay. What are you being told as far as getting this building back up and operating?
The last line of communication I had from the building owner is that it could be from 2 weeks to 3 months. The biggest part of the problem here is that we share utilities. All of our water and gas and electric is on one main. So one main supplies 5, 6, 7 businesses. So what has happened since the fire, they had to cut off all utilities, which it's not that easy as flipping a switch. They have to go through, assess all the damage that it's done, make sure if they flip that switch that another fire is not going to break out. Same thing with gas, same thing with water. Basically, you have to have electric first, gas, and then water. All the lines inside of this building are now frozen. So the thing is getting the heat to unfreeze those pipes and then turning that water back on to get it flowing. And if they don't do it correctly, you're talking a whole half block of businesses underwater. Yeah, it's tough.
you found space to work in, and that should help you through this time a little bit. But let's talk about where else you're getting support from.
I've had several customers message through Instagram, text, offering any type of help that I need as far as, you know, clearing the building or clearing my space, repainting or any of that type of thing that needs to be done. Also, you know, saying where you're going to be, we want to come support you. You know, for me, fortunately, I have great insurance that covers these types of things. You know, unfortunate for like your average server, your average bartender, they don't have that type of insurance. They don't expect to walk in the next day and see their place of business up in smoke. So, you know, I had really good insurance, great insurance that's helping me in that manner. So I don't look for or need, you know, to reach out to community. You know, if they want to put dollars or push anything, push it to the people at Solar.
I don't want to take too much more of your time because I can see both our breath and we're in this great little space with no heat and no electricity. But there is a fundraiser coming up for the employees that have been affected by this.
Yeah, I believe it is this coming Tuesday at Blind Bob's. I think they're doing a bingo night there, and they also have a GoFundMe set up for the employees of Solar. So if any of my customers, clients, they want to do anything, do it for the people of Solar.
James, thanks so much for your time, and good luck with everything.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm glad, you know, that the media has reached out and recognized that, you know, there are several businesses that have been affected by this.
And we've got links to both of those fundraisers on our website at WYSO.org. I'm Jerry Kenny. This is WYSO Weekend. Owner of the Meadowlark Restaurant in Kettering and Wheat Penny Oven and Bar in Dayton, Chef Elizabeth Wiley has been a player in the area's restaurant scene on and off for almost 40 years. Over that time, she's made more of a name for herself nationally and watched other local female chefs climb the ladder alongside her. But for many, including Wiley, being a woman has made that ladder hard to climb. In September, she became a James Beard Foundation Fellow in its Women's Entrepreneurial Leadership Program. Community Voices producer George Drake Jr. explored her story and the trend of female chefs around the city.
Following a busy lunch rush and a mid-afternoon meeting at the Meadowlark Restaurant, Chef Wiley confirms with members of her staff that she's around if they need clarification on anything.
I'm available if we need to talk about stuff out there.
All right, cool.
But getting to where she is now came with its challenges. She moved to Dayton in 1980 to work for the Wins Cafe. And following that, some of her first experiences in commercial kitchens were as a line cook elsewhere in the country, where she was usually the only white person, as well as the only woman. And her fellow cooks made it known to her that they didn't think that she was on their level.
I would be filleting fish, and one of the guys, you know, one of the Hispanic guys that I worked with would, you know, come up to me and say, have you ever worked in a kitchen before? And, you know, I'm filleting fish and he's, you know, chopping celery.
And it didn't end there. Sometimes they'd take a pan, stick it under the broiler for a minute, and then put it on the floor.
And then, you know, there's a pan on the floor. You reach down and pick it up. You burn your hand. Everybody laughs, you know, just the, you know, that kind of thing.
She said she was pranked like that, not because she was new or because she was white.
Woman. I think it's because I was a woman.
She continued on, developing her cooking skills and taking ownership of her work. But she says that even after moving to San Francisco, she still lacked the confidence to go to the better restaurants in the area and apply.
But I used to take a bus across town and look into restaurant windows and look at the menu that they had posted out on the sidewalk and just be like, wow, you know, just try to learn from that.
Eventually, she bought a van and started her own knife sharpening business, mainly so she'd have a way to get into those restaurants.
And I would be able to go in the kitchen because I was the knife sharpener, and then I would be able to look around and see, try to see how they were doing things. I should have just applied.
After bouncing around between a few cities and restaurants, she came back to Dayton in 1994. She enlisted the help of former co-workers from the Wins Cafe to help at Meadowlark and has kept a fairly balanced kitchen with both men and women. But it hasn't always been an even split. While sometimes there have been more of one than the other, currently it's more men, she says that a mix is key. Since she came back to Dayton, she's been witness to the changing face of the city's restaurant scene. She's watched it become more female-driven. One of the standouts was a nationally respected Dayton chef who had also come back home.
You know, there was Ann Kearney, who grew up here, moved away to New Orleans, became a chef, became nationally known, became a Food & Wine magazine up-and-coming new chef, and became a James Beard Foundation nominee. She came back to Dayton, and she opened a restaurant.
Over the years, women like Kearney, or Dana Downs of Roost, Jen DeSanto of Fresco, and others, along with Chef Wiley, have all helped form a pedestal that collectively lifts up the women of Dayton's restaurant industry. And Wiley's business partner, Liz Valenti, says that pedestal relies on a sense of community.
The women here are a close-knit group. We support each other. We're not rivals. We may be competitive with each other playfully, personally, but we see each other as assets.
Valenti feels comfortable approaching any of the chefs in town for their input on a recipe or thoughts about a prospective employee and doesn't need to worry about getting her ideas stolen or a bad recommendation.
There's nothing but camaraderie and support within this community. And I've never experienced anything like this. It's truly amazing.
Wiley also sees that sense of community, but says at the end of the day, while they all encourage each other, as well as mentor younger chefs, it all comes down to just one thing.
Really, it was just determined women kind of doing their own thing on their own. And then after that, we all became, friends and we're all buddies.
As she puts it, eating isn't going to go digital. So there has to be brick and mortar restaurants in the future, which means the people of a younger generation who aspire to be chefs have nothing to worry about.
And so I think that people in their 20s, particularly women, have the whole world to look forward to. And food's only going to get better. It already has gotten so much better since I was a little kid. No more bologna sandwiches for me.
Chef Elizabeth Wiley is the owner of Meadowlark Restaurant and Wheat Penny Oven and Bar. For Culture Couch on WYSO, I'm George Drake Jr.
Culture Couch is made possible by a generous grant from the Ohio Arts Council. I'm Jerry Kenny. This is WYSO Weekend. Thanks so much for joining us. Today on this program, we've got two Dayton Youth Radio stories. Our first young producer is Alexis Jones, a senior at Centerville High School. Here's her story about the relationship she has with her father.
In 2016, at the beginning of my junior year, I had a crisis. It started when my mom met her new boyfriend. They were both from the Dayton area, so they spent a lot of time together. They decided to move in with each other. I had no say in their decision. Even though the house we moved into was spacious, my home life still felt crowded. You see, ever since my parents got divorced when I was 3 years old, it's always been just my mom and me, so I was not happy. I've always been quiet, sensitive, caring, a little different. I enjoy my own company. I love being alone and just listening to music or reading a book. But this was different. I didn't feel that my mom and I were as close as we used to be. I felt really lonely and I crashed. One morning I just woke up feeling terrible. I felt trapped. I was losing control and felt suffocated. My life did not seem significant. I didn't see any point in my existence. These thoughts led to an emotional breakdown and I had to be hospitalized. I was in the hospital for only a week. Though it was not the most pleasant time in my life, it wasn't all terrible. After I was released, I continued with my therapy. There were tons of questionnaires about my background, personal life, and mental processes. I realize now that they were all an attempt to get to the root of my issues. I remember one day, we were in group, and the lead nurse was asking about our relationship with our parents. When she got to me, I just talked about my mom. She noticed I didn't mention my father, so she asked, "Well, what about your dad?" I didn't really say anything because my dad isn't a part of my life. "Why?" she asked. "Is he a drug addict? Incarcerated? Are there legal restrictions?" I just shook my head as a response. "Oh," she said. "He's perfectly capable of being in your life, but chooses not to. So he's just a jerk." When I heard those words, my stomach dropped. That was the start of my journey of understanding my issues. My dad has another wife, two other children. He has a stable job and is able-bodied. Yet he has not chosen to be a part of my life, ever. The last time I saw my dad was almost 8 years ago. I went to visit him in California. I stayed with his new family for 3 weeks. It wasn't pleasant, and I've never gone back. He sends me money once a year to cover holidays and my birthday. It's a straight money transfer from his account to my mom's, and then she transfers it to mine. There's nothing intimate or personal about it. Other than the annual monetary gift, we never speak. I have no relationship with my father, and never really have. Throughout my life, I was always content with it just being my mom and me. Well, at least I thought I was content. In reality, my father's absence from my life has harmed me in more ways than I realize. For one, I don't trust men. Whenever I'm interested in someone, as much as I want to get close to them, I can't. My inner feelings contradict how I behave. I think it's safer for me to not engage, to keep my distance, to not get hurt. I often feel that the world would be better off if I was invisible, that I am an inconvenience. Because of me, my mom is a single mother, and my father sees me as just a financial obligation. Logically, I know that this isn't true, but logic doesn't rule my emotions. It is truly hard to overcome feelings of abandonment and rejection, even if it wasn't done deliberately. But I am working on it, and I realize that before I can fix anything, I have to understand and acknowledge the root of my problems. And I think I'm almost there. For Dayton Youth Radio at Centerville, this is Alexis.
That was a story entitled Roots, written and produced by Alexis Jones at Centerville High School. Special thanks to Trisha Raypock, broadcasting teacher at Centerville. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Basine Blunt.
And our second young producer for Dayton Youth Radio attends the David H. Ponitz Career Technology Center. Here's Youth Radio Project Manager Basim Blunt.
We've been doing Dayton Youth Radio for about 3 years now on YSO. And through this program, I would say I've met almost 100 high school teenagers. It seems like more than ever, teens want to talk about the effect that their parents' divorce had on their lives. Here is a story about that topic with a small twist.
I'm Daylon McKinney, and I'm 17. I'm a former athlete. I used to play basketball for Ponitz, and I played from freshman to JV. And then I stopped playing. One thing that was cool about playing basketball in high school is my family came to all my games.
One time I missed a layup, and I heard all my brothers and my mom and dad yelling at me like, come on, you're supposed to make that. It's a bunny. It meant a lot to me because I know they really care about how I play.
A lot of my teammates on the basketball team don't have fathers. You know, that's one thing that bothers me, the lack of fathers in homes. Just like any other household, we had a lot of static or turmoil in the house. There were also good times along with the bad. On the weekends, we would all sit in my mom and dad's bed and watch TV. Or we would all watch a movie together. My mom and dad were really silly and goofy, and sometimes they would play fight, and my dad would tickle her because my mom is extremely ticklish. Whenever my dad would start tickling my mom, she would call me and my brother's name, and we would come running into the room, and we would wrestle my dad to get him off of her. I remember my parents would never argue in front of me and my brother. They would always argue in the living room or in their bedroom with the door shut. I began to notice the fights between my parents were happening more and more often. There was a time me and my brother were chilling in his room playing video games. So me and my brother heard my parents' door slam, and we was like, here they go again, they're about to argue again. They come out, and we hear my mom yelling, and I see my dad getting in his car and pulling off. I asked my mom, where's my dad going? So she's saying, like, he has to go, he just has to go. I begin to get upset, me and my brother were getting upset, and I start crying. I began to immediately start thinking of words like, my dad's not coming back. My dad's gone. He's really leaving me forever. You know what I'm saying? I'm a young kid, so, you know, kids automatically think the worst. I went home and interviewed my mom to ask some questions about this day, what the argument was about that night.
One time when we were younger, Dad actually left at night. Do you remember?
I do. Life is hard.
especially when me and DJ were younger.
Yeah.
There was lots of arguing in the home.
Yeah, that's because, you know, somebody didn't have a job or, you know, maybe we weren't ready for whatever life brought our way. I would never lie to you and tell you marriage is easy because it is not. But I knew that he wasn't leaving us for good. I just knew that he needed to cool off because I don't think I was going to stop.
I still to this day don't know what that argument was about, but I still remember it.
You've been holding that all these years? It bothers me that you didn't come to me or your dad to get that resolved. I hate that. I'm sorry about that.
When I wake up in the morning, I see my dad walking into the bathroom, and I'm like, what are you doing here? I thought you were gone. And he turns around and puts his finger over his mouth and gives me that shh face.
That was a real good moment for me because I thought, wow, my dad must really care about me. And I knew to him, keeping the family together and him raising me and my brother was really important to him. It seems like it's normal for black teens my age to not have a father in the household. And I feel like that's kind of weird because in the vows, don't it say, till death do us part, through sickness and health, through whatever, rich or poor. You don't know. I don't know. I'm only a teenager. I don't know nothing about that marriage stuff.
You know, my dad's not an emotional person, and he doesn't really talk a lot. But through his actions, he's always shown that he's loved me, and he's always shown that he cares about me. And I really appreciate that. Thanks, Dad. For Dayton Youth Radio at Pontus Career Technology Center, this is Daylon McKinney.
That was a story called A Full House, written and produced by Daylon McKinney, a senior at Pontus Career Technology Center. Special thanks to Jeffrey Crowell and Joanne Viscup. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Basine Blunt.
Support for Dayton Youth Radio comes from the Virginia W. Kettering Foundation and the Ohio Arts Council. I'm Jerry Kenny. You're listening to Why So Weekend.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the first week of deep winter, the third week of the bedding plant moon, and the third week of the sun in Capricorn. Different atmospheric conditions, different kinds of weather are precisely different moods writes the phenomenologist David Ibram. Wind, rain, snow, fog, hail, open skies, heavy overcast, each affects the relation between our body and the living land in a specific way, altering the tenor of our reflections and the tonality of our dreams. So, what might that mean this week? Maybe a little optimism in spite of the arrival of deep winter. The bedding plant moon, full and at perigee on January 1st, now begins to wane, softening lunar stress and maybe even the weather. Sunrise remains at its latest time of the winter until January 11th, and the days and nights belong to the period of winter sunstop, the darkest days of all. Still, a few last quadranted meteors might be visible after midnight, and the solar outriders, the morning stars Jupiter and Mars, brighten the east at 7 o'clock, their presence strangely comforting. Perhaps because when we see and watch them, we know we are not adrift in a meaningless and cold darkness, but rather somehow are connected to the sky that will bring back the sun. In a way, we ride those planets and the stars around them, their motion always a motion toward spring, never really retrograde in their promise. Traveling under the sky, we can stop to measure time with simple observations. We can start a daily check of pussy willows. Their opening keeps time for the year. Each cracking catkin tells of spring's approach. And if you see the green tips of snowdrops emerging from the garden, measure them before they're covered with snow. Then measure the approach of March as they slowly grow. And if you have made a 12-week Advent wreath, today marks the end of the 5th week. And when the 12th week is over, the chilly but promising season of early spring will have begun. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the 2nd week of deep winter. In the meantime, watch the world to see how the land and the sky, as David Ibram might suggest, alter the tenor of your reflections and your dreams.
Poor Will's Almanac for 2018 is available from Amazon. And you can purchase my book, Home is the Prime Meridian, Essays on Time and Place and Spirit, from the same site. The collection contains a number of the selections heard on this radio segment.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
That's it for this edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world. I'm Jerry Kenny. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 10. Coming up next on WYSO, it's Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.